Blog Talk Radio.
If it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchLivecast.com. Good Sunday evening. I'm Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks here with you on this final day of September, Sunday, September 30th, 2018, and this is Wrestling Night in America. We are here to talk about the big events in pro wrestling, as we are each and every Sunday night on PWTorchLivecast.com. If you'd like to call in and talk to me and my guest co-host, who I'll bring along in just a minute, PWTorch.com contributor Zach Haydorn. The number is 515-605-9345. Tonight, we will cover in depth next Saturday, Super Showdown from Australia that WWE will be holding on the WWE Network. We'll talk about Fighting Spirit Unleashed tonight at the Walter Pyramid in Long Beach, California. That show is getting underway as we speak here. We'll preview that card. We'll also talk about the latest happenings on Raw, SmackDown, NXT, the Mae Young Classic, and maybe get to some progress and Death Before Dishonor results as well. But right now, as promised, my co-host for the evening, PWTorch.com contributor Zach Haydorn. Zach, good to talk to you again.
Greg, you too. Thanks so much for having me. Always enjoy being here.
And always enjoy having you on. Before we get started, of course, tell the folks at home a little bit about the work you do for The Torch.
Oh, I'd love to. Thank you. So you guys can check out my my weekly reports for Raw on Monday nights alongside Wade Kellers. I write the Alternative Perspective Report each and every Monday night live during the show. So you can check down the rundown of the events and then my analysis on segments and matches, et cetera. That's all there for you on Monday nights. Usually now with the 205 Live show moving to Wednesdays, you can check out my 205 Live report either late Wednesday night or on Thursday. And the same kind of thing, just a rundown of the show with what happened and then analysis on different segments throughout. And then on the weekend, usually on Friday afternoon sometime, my VIP audio show on the Canvas drops. And that is a show that takes a peek into the artistic performance side of the business. So we kind of leave booking decisions, storylines at the door, and then just talk about current events from the artistic side. So we'll do in-depth analysis of matches and promos. There's preview shows in the archives right now. So if kind of the art of wrestling is your thing and you want to dive in, would love for you to press play on an episode and go VIP to do so. It's on the Canvas and it drops Fridays for VIP members of the PW Torch.
PWTorch.com/GoVIP is how you can sign up as a member of the Pro Wrestling Torch family and listen to Zach's audio show. Now, Zach, am I mistaken or did you recently co-host the Bruce Mitchell audio show with Bruce Mitchell?
I did, yes. So a couple weeks back, yes, Bruce and I did the mailbag edition of the Bruce Mitchell audio show. So we talked a variety of fun topics. Actually, some great email questions came in regarding All In with Bruce, of course, some historical stuff too. So we really got to cover a wide variety of topics. That's I believe that's 3 weeks old now. So you can check that out in the archives as well. But that was a blast. So please do so.
That's your initiation into the Torch family, is having to co-host a show with Bruce. So you've passed that test. So now we welcome you with open arms.
There we go. It was a lot of fun.
Into the Torch family. I kid, of course. Bruce is a very valued member of the Torch family here, and I'm honored to have my column appear in the same newsletter in which his columns appear. So all joking aside, though, Zach, I did want to ask you. This wasn't even written down in my notes today, so we're going off script immediately, but your coverage of 205 Live for PWTorch.com that you just mentioned has sprouted in me this idea to ask you about the recent move of 205 Live, as you mentioned, from Tuesday nights on the WWE Network live immediately following SmackDown to Wednesdays. It airs before NXT at 7 p.m. Eastern on the WWE Network, and for the past 2 weeks has been taped before SmackDown Live airs. And I just kind of want to get your impression the first 2 weeks of this. I guess we'll call it an experiment because we don't know if this is permanent, given that they're taping the Mixed Match Challenge after SmackDown now, which is why they've moved 205 Live to being taped before SmackDown. But what's your impression of the move so far? Has it been a net positive, negative, or maybe no change in your mind as far as, you know, the presentation of the show?
Yeah, I think for sure it's a net positive. I mean, I don't know that it's a drastic net positive, but at the very least, you know, the show ultimately still has a lot of the same problems. It has the problems of it just lacks some significant star power. But what the move has done is the show's not taped in front of a tired audience anymore. You know, the crowd, yes, is filing into the arena for the most part as the show's going on, especially the early matches of 205 Live. But by the time the 205 Live main event is being taped, you know, that audience is pretty full because SmackDown is about to start right after that main event's over. So I've seen a noticeable difference in crowd response. People seem to be more awake, and just overall, they're just clicking with it a little bit more because they're just not tired. So I think at the very least, that in and of itself is a net positive. Now, as the show continues on in this fashion, there might, you know, you keep watching matches like Mustafa Ali versus Hideo Itami this past week was a really good match, and it got a 205 Live chant going. It had a Mustafa Ali chant going. So having a crowd that's upbeat, energized, and ready to go, I think is helping the show because it's helping to present the stars in the ring as stars, because you don't have the audience just sitting on their hands waiting for the dark match to begin. So I like the move a lot. I think the fact that it's airing on Wednesdays is irrelevant for the most part, because I'm not sure, I don't have the numbers right in front of me of how many people specifically watch 205 live every Tuesday when it was on Tuesday. So for me, it's a net positive. I think ultimately we'll see what the experiment tells WWE, but like I said, at the very least, it's being taped in front of a crowd that's ready to watch wrestling and not tired of watching wrestling, and that is going to help no matter what.
This is a move that, since the 205 Live taping was announced, people were kind of wondering why they were taping it after SmackDown, especially when the first couple episodes hit and it was clear that the SmackDown audience was leaving or was tired by the time 205 Live aired. So there were a lot of people, even from the outset, wondering why they're not taping it before SmackDown. Why do you think WWE was so stubborn in not making an obvious, what would seem to be from an outsider looking in, a painless move to make the atmosphere better for the wrestlers and better for the audience watching at home, taping it in front of a fresher audience before the show? Why has it taken so long for WWE to make that move, do you think?
I think out of the gate, they really wanted the show to be about being live and for it to be live on the WWE Network after SmackDown's over. So I think that a lot of emphasis was put on that. I think the yearning for Cruiserweight wrestling was at a high point after the Cruiserweight Classic. So I think the WWE thought to themselves, huh, let's try to capitalize on this. Let's get some live eyes on 205 Live. We're coming out of SmackDown. But I think they waited just way, way too long to see the issue with that. And maybe they finally have here. And I know that, you know, we're in Mixed Match Challenge season and things could change when that's over. But I don't know. I can't see them going back at this point. It's just it's too smart of a move, and it really it puts that show and that brand just in a much better position to succeed if it's before SmackDown.
And I think it's an easier sell to the audience too, tuning in an hour before NXT and, you know, watching 2 hours of WWE Network programming, better than asking fans to watch 2 hours of SmackDown Live on broadcast television, then asking them to go and watch 205 Live, an hour of 205 Live, a third hour on Tuesday nights afterward. I think that's asking a lot of the fans. And like you said, I'm not privy either to the 205 Live numbers, but I don't know how well it was doing live. I don't think it was even really usually in the top 10 of WWE's most watched programming each week. So, you know, the aspect of being live apparently didn't add a lot of value to the viewers who were watching on the WWE Network whenever they were watching it, whether it was live or on delay. So I agree with you. I hope this move is permanent. I think it's better for the audience live. I think it's better for the audience watching on the network. And it's better for the psyche of the wrestlers to not have people leaving during your matches, to not have people silent and tired during your matches. Like you said, crowd is still filing in, but at least by the time they get in there, they give more of a reaction to the wrestlers.
Yeah, you know, and look, we've all been to wrestling shows before. You know, when you first walk down there, whether, you know, to me, whether it's your fifth or tenth show, you still have that reaction of, oh my God, this is exciting. You get that little shot of adrenaline. And I think that's going to do a lot for the show. And in addition, I think it's going to give the stars of 205 Live, guys like Mustafa Ali, guys like Cedric Alexander, like Buddy Murphy, the chance to shine more and in front of a more engaged audience that, like I said, will in turn present them and make them look like bigger stars. And since that's what that brand needs, it's a good thing and it's an important thing.
It's been a while since I've been to a WWE live event, but you know, your mention of, you know, the first sight of the arena once you walk into the building, even still today, at 34 years old, if I was to go to a WWE event, when you hand your ticket and get it scanned and walk into the arena and walk into the actual arena portion where the staging is and where the ring is for the first time, there's always a sense of awe that comes over me. Like it's like a little kid has taken over my body for a brief time, and you know, you just take everything in, and it's just a really cool feeling. And for as many live events and WWE live events that I've been to, I've never lost that feeling walking into the find my seat, you know, and that's just a really cool feeling, and it's hard to describe.
Absolutely, I totally agree.
We move on now to WWE Super Showdown, which takes place October 6th, 4 a.m. Eastern time on the WWE Network. This airing from Australia. And this is in a machine gun rapid fire type. It's the first of many shows, one right after the other. We've got Super Showdown on October 6th. Then 8 days later, we have Bound for Glory, Impact Wrestling's pay-per-view on October 14th. Then we have 2 weeks later, WWE Evolution, the first all-women's pay-per-view put on by WWE on October 28th. And then the next Friday is WWE Crown Jewel from Saudi Arabia. And then, of course, into November, you have the Survivor Series. So we are entering a very busy time, and we will have you covered each week here on Wrestling Night in America. Just quickly to go through our schedule upcoming next week, I'm expected to have Mike McMahon join me. He covers Impact Wrestling for PWTorch.com. We will spend the bulk of that show previewing Bound for Glory, Impact's crown jewel of their pay-per-view schedule, I guess. And then on October 14th, after Bound for Glory goes off the air, Mike McMahon and Andrew Socek, who usually handle post-Impact live casts on Thursday night, will be staging a Wrestling Night in America takeover. They'll be taking your calls and your reactions to Bound for Glory as soon as it goes off the air here on PWTorchLiveCast.com. And the next week we will be back regularly scheduled on October 21st. And then on the 28th after Evolution, we will have our standard post-WWE pay-per-view live cast, again, right here on PWTorchLiveCast.com.
Hey, PW Torch fans, it's Sam Roberts, the last professional broadcaster, here to tell you about my podcast, Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast. Every Thursday morning on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Spotify, on YouTube, NotSam.com, wherever you get podcasts, you will find it. Interviews with the A-list. of pro wrestling, whether it's Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Roman Reigns, Daniel Bryan, just recently Corey Graves, Mauro Ranallo. They're all guests of Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast, as well as regulars like Dan Soder and one of my favorite people to talk about pro wrestling with, Wade Keller. Plus, every week we do a deep dive and analyze what's going on in the world of pro wrestling this week with the state of wrestling. Bruce Pritchard calls it the best interview in wrestling podcasts. I don't know if that's true, but that's what Bruce Pritchard says. Subscribe now. Get it every Thursday morning across podcast platforms or get the premium version at stitcher.com/notsam.
So that's our schedule going forward. And Zach, the first match, perhaps the main event of Super Showdown in Australia is Triple H with Shawn Michaels taking on The Undertaker, who will be seconded by Kane. And this match, which was once, it was important because it was the last time, or billed as the last time, that Triple H versus Undertaker would ever square off in singles action, has taken on a greater importance with the suspected return of Shawn Michaels, at least in tag team action, at Saudi Arabia's Crown Jewel event. This would seem to set up a Triple H and HBK versus Undertaker and Kane tag team match for that show. So how do you feel about the potential of Shawn Michaels coming out of retirement, even if it is for a tag match at Crown Jewel?
You know, it's a great question. Personally, just from a, you know, being a wrestling fan at heart and being someone who I've liked the fact that Shawn Michaels has stayed retired when so many of his peers haven't. I personally thought that's been a classy move. So coming back for a tag team match like the way that he is in Saudi Arabia at Crown Jewel, I think I'd pass on it ultimately if it's me, just because I just like the way his career ended and the fact that he's coming back for just kind of a house show-esque tag team match just doesn't seem in the lights enough for me. But at the same time, for Shawn Michaels, the guy, and the guy who maybe doesn't feel like he can put on a five-star match anymore, a guy who hasn't been in the ring in quite a few years now, and a guy who can go over there and make a lot of money, I can't fault him for looking at the situation and going ahead and doing it. So I'm stuck right in the middle on it, because ultimately it's a business, and Shawn's got to do what he's got to do, and I think he's got a good opportunity to make some money. But I wouldn't have done it. I would have rather had him stay behind. But on that note, if he's going to come back, I think he's pretty protected in this match. He's got Undertaker, he's got Triple H, he's in there, Kane's in there. I mean, there's a lot of natural storylines that are just going to be there to help the match along, to help the story along. So I think he's going to be just fine. But like I said, I think it's a little out of the lights for him in terms of what I would have envisioned his return match being. But so be it. I understand the situation.
Taking a step back for a minute, how do you view these super shows, whether it's Australia, whether it's Saudi Arabia? We've had the one in the spring in Saudi Arabia. We've seen the lineup for Super Showdown. A lot of people are calling this a glorified house show where they don't expect a lot major to happen, even though we've already talked about one of the major shows happening, a WrestleMania-type match with Triple H versus Undertaker. You know, if we were to say house show, pay-per-view, weekly TV episode, where are these super shows in your mind falling? Are they really glorified house shows? Do they fall somewhere between as far as importance and the effect that they have on storylines going forward? Are they bigger or more important than regular pay-per-views? Are they less important? You know, how do they fall when you look at house shows and pay-per-views and weekly television?
It's so interesting because my brain has not calibrated itself to tell me that this is bigger than a house show, but I guess my heart hasn't recalibrated itself to tell me that, but my brain knows that it is. I mean, these are big, big shows. I mean, I don't know if they're as big as WrestleMania or SummerSlam or even like Hell in a Cell. So I think they're probably, excuse me, a step down from, you know, the traditional pay-per-views just in terms of titles being defended and storylines, et cetera. But outside of that, I mean, these are big shows. I mean, you have the Shield reuniting coming up. That's a big deal. You've got Shawn Michaels in Triple H's corner. Triple H and Undertaker are facing off. They're having a match. I mean, that's usually saved for WrestleMania. I think the difference with these shows is that kind of puts them on a level below those traditional pay-per-views is the fact that I think people know they know what the deal here is with these. I mean, they're a money grab for WWE's part. That's why the shows are happening. They're not traditional events that WWE books for, and they're, you know, booking to make it everything fit together now that they have them. So I think that's, from a mental standpoint, is a hurdle to jump over. But once you do that and look at these shows, I mean, like I said, they're big ones. Triple H and Undertaker in a match. Shawn Michaels coming out of retirement. I mean, those are big deals. So I think a lot of people are coming along and maybe want to be resistant to the fact that, hey, this is a real show on the WWE calendar that has significance. But I think the more that these shows happen, we're going to have to get past and just accept that realization that these are big shows and they're going to mean something. I mean, a lot of WWE's weekly programming, almost all of it, is focused on these shows. I mean, look at WWE Evolution. It's not even mentioned because they have these two gargantuan shows going on. So I think, I'm a little bit behind from a personal perspective, but in terms of putting my analysis hat on, they're big.
Yeah. Tag match, Lashley and John Cena versus Elias and Kevin Owens. A lot has been set up on TV involving Lashley and Elias and KO. Looks like Lashley and KO are slated for a program. Where does John Cena fit in here? Do you expect him to make a surprise appearance perhaps on Raw tomorrow night to hype this match? Or is this just, you know, John Cena making a cameo appearance in Australia for this?
Yeah, I think option number two, Greg. Option number two. I'll take what's behind door. Yeah, I think he's just going to, you know, he's going to be there, and I think he's going to do his John Cena stuff. He'll run to the ring. He'll pump the crowd up. I can see this match maybe opening the show to get the crowd just into everything. But yeah, I don't think we're going to see a five-star classic out of him. I think we're going to see his traditional moves. I think we're going to see him maybe in some fun spot with Kevin Owens, maybe some interaction with Leo Rush if he's out there, and attitude adjustment, and then, you know, send it home. I think it'll be pretty simple as far as his participation goes.
Daniel Bryan versus The Miz in a winner becomes number one contender match, or winner gets a WWE title shot in the future match. I thought the stipulation here was interesting, Zach, because nothing on TV has really been played in the direction of either of these guys getting a title match. AJ Styles and Samoa Joe seem embroiled in a long-term feud. Daniel Bryan and The Miz seem embroiled in a long-term feud, both of which seem like they could extend into, you know, the fall and the winter. So sticking this number one contender stipulation into this certainly makes me wonder when that is going to be cashed in, and if that's going to start a feud with the two men, whether it's Bryan or Miz versus Styles or Joe. Or is this just kind of a one-off? You think the number one contender is just for the Saudi Arabia show? Maybe the WWE Championship is defended there, where Bryan or Miz gets an opportunity there, and then they go back to the feud they were in originally before this stipulation.
Yeah, I think this is the one of the most intriguing matches on the card in terms of, you know, the storylines that can come out of it and the storyline going in and just what it means for the future of the WWE Championship on SmackDown. I think, you know, they can go a lot of different directions, but I think either way, what's interesting about it is you may be able to tell if this match goes on ahead of Joe and Styles at the event on Saturday, you might be able to forecast the outcome of that match possibly, because if they're going to go with just kind of wrap up the Bryan Miz feud, and they're going to wrap up the Joe and AJ feud on this show. If they decide to go that route, I can see if Miz gets the victory over Daniel Bryan, then I would assume that AJ would probably keep the belt in that later match. If the results are flipped and Daniel Bryan gets the victory, well, then maybe Samoa Joe comes out victorious. I think those four guys are connected, because the loser of of the Bryan Miz match could easily just go ahead and take on the whoever doesn't win the championship in the championship match. So I think a lot's at stake. The way I see it playing out, I don't think WWE's ready to wrap up either of these feuds right now. So I think in some form or fashion, my prediction is Daniel Bryan gets the victory over The Miz, and I see The Miz getting involved in his championship match to kind of make sure that he doesn't win the title to keep that feud going. So you get Bryan with the win, you can set up a match with him, and then we can talk about this match later, but I'm thinking Samoa Joe gets the championship here. And then in that future match, Bryan doesn't win the title, Joe still looks like a dominant champion, and then Daniel Bryan has a bigger beef with Miz than he does even now. So that's my prediction on it. That's my take. I think it's going to be a really good match. I think it's been just a top feud on SmackDown. It's been enjoyable to watch, and I'm excited for it. I think there's a lot of different ways it can go and a lot of angles that can stem from that very match.
Yeah, and I guess my thought on this was I would hate for this what feels like a bit of a shoehorned stipulation to prematurely end either of these two feuds because they are so good, because they have so much mileage left to go in both of them, I believe. And I would hate to say, okay, you know, let's say, for example, Bryan wins the match against The Miz and Joe beats Styles for the WWE title. I would never say no to a Daniel Bryan versus Samoa Joe feud, but, you know, let's visit that later on. Let's visit that in 2019. You know, when you've already got two really hot feuds right now, let's ride them. Ride them as far as they'll go, and I hope that's what happens. I hope that it's just a stopover for Bryan or Miz, and then they continue on with their feud as well. Moving over to the Raw brand.
Are you
go ahead.
Oh, real quick, Greg. Yeah, just question for you. Are you concerned at all that if – I know we'll get to this match in more in-depth later, but are you concerned at all over the fact that if Joe loses this time around, it's just too many losses in a row to keep the program going with AJ?
Well, it depends on how he loses. I thought he was ready to win at Hell in a Cell. They did the finish where he came out looking pretty good because AJ had the visual tap out before the three count. You can only do those kinds of finishes so many times before fans stop buying that opponent as credible. So if Joe doesn't win here, they would have to do it in some way that doesn't take the wind out of the sails of the feud and still gives him an excuse to get a WWE title match again going forward to keep that feud with Styles going. So I don't know that WWE's booking has it in them to do that. I think the smart money would be on Joe getting the victory here and Styles chasing for a little while at least.
Yeah.
Six-man tag action with the top names on the Raw brand will take place at Super Showdown when the Shield face off against Braun Strowman, Dolph Ziggler, and Drew McIntyre. Zach, what's been your assessment so far on the success of WWE's attempt to turn Braun Strowman heel by associating him with Ziggler and McIntyre, and by association, trying to get Reigns more over as a babyface by associating him with his former, now current Shield members, Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose?
Oh man, I really don't think they've done a very good job with Braun Strowman at all in terms of turning him heel. I'm pretty hard on that on my Raw reports each and every week, and there doesn't seem to be a real concerted effort to treat him as a true heel. I mean, if you look back to this past week on Raw, you know, he's in there and yeah, he's insulting Roman Reigns, which, you know, is the heel thing to do, obviously, but that gets a babyface reaction for the most part. But not only that, he makes it even worse because he's insulting Baron Corbin as well. And Baron Corbin is one of the most hated guys on Raw, for better or for worse. I'm not sure if it's a true heel heat or just go away heat, but either way, he gets one of the most negative reactions every single week. And you've got Braun Strowman there running him down to the fans' delight. So I really think, you know, they're kind of herky-jerky all over the place with that turn. And I think the more it goes on, the more I get the feeling of they needed a big star to go up against Roman Reigns, and Braun was kind of the only guy there. At the same token, I do really like Ziggler and McIntyre and what they're doing right now from a heel perspective. I think they really come off well as a heel team, but a heel team with credibility, a team that's not just getting their victories on, you know, by cheating or by different kinds of shenanigans in the ring. I mean, they look like the dominant force. And I think for the most part, they've been able to talk their way into good heel heat. But yeah, you go back to that, the Strowman Reigns combination with both guys being as miscast as they are. I think it just doesn't make the whole thing gel like I'd like it to gel.
Searching for more great pro wrestling talk? Then join me, Jason Powell, host of the free weekly Pro Wrestling Boom podcast. Each week, you'll hear the latest news and analysis from me and my team at ProWrestling.net, along with other pro wrestling media members. Plus, the Pro Wrestling Boom podcast features long-form interviews with notable names in the pro wrestling industry. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Downcast, and all your favorite secondary apps, or visit us directly at PWBoom.com. Once again, that's PWBoom.com.
I'll disagree with you a little bit. I think Strowman, in from what I've heard, is getting more heel heat than I expected him to get, which, you know, granted, it, I had low expectations for this, so maybe our opinions do line up, but it's just where the expectations lie for each of us. So, you know, to that end, sure. I think he is getting more over as a heel. With Reigns, I don't know. I still get the sense when he's on his own in any way, when he's being spotlighted as Roman Reigns, I think the fans still tend to react negatively to him. Whenever he's in a group setting with the Shield and they're all doing something together, of course he's going to get cheered by, you know, by association. So, you know, this is probably a long-term play by WWE. I know they're teasing Dean Ambrose and the heel turn. We'll talk about that a little later on when we talk about Raw, but I think this is a way for WWE to, if nothing else, hide Roman Reigns for a little while and let the booze subside. And then maybe when they feel like the fans have forgotten that they hate Roman Reigns because he's been so associated with the Shield for so long, they'll let him loose and run back into the wild on his own. But, you know, we'll see on that.
Yeah, and I think, too, with the Strowman heel turn, it's so hard to judge accurately right now when he's opposite Roman Reigns, because Roman Reigns just gets him different reactions based on who's in the audience that day. Like, it's really hard to judge truly how he's doing as a heel when he's opposite a guy like Reigns who's miscast and not getting the babyface reaction fully that they want him to get when he's on his own. So it'll be interesting to watch Braun Strowman in a different program, not opposite Reigns, to really gauge how that heel turn is doing. Yeah, I just wish ultimately, I guess, that they just took away some of those. You know, he does the Braun roar that gets a big pop, and like that. I guess that's the part that's not buttoned up in my eyes as far as the heel turn goes. But we'll see. We'll be able to tell better when Reigns isn't in the picture with him, I think.
In six-person tag action, the Bellas and Ronda Rousey take on the Riot Squad. How do you expect this to lead into Evolution? Because we've got Super Showdown on October 6th. We've got Evolution at the end of October. Do you see this having Evolution implications?
I do. I absolutely do. I think this is where we'll see some sort of altercation, I think, between Nikki and Ronda. And I think then we start that train down the track. I think that's the match they're kind of lining up with all this, with having, you know, Ronda and the Bellas interact backstage, they're interacting in the ring, they're having this six-man tag. I just don't think it's by accident, and Nikki and Ronda don't have a match at Evolution currently, and I think it just makes sense. I think it's a decent move at this point, too. I think it's smart not to give away a huge Ronda match on that show, but put her in a match that will get some eyes on the product. I mean, Nikki's got a following, and she can work heel very well, I think, and I think it'll be a decent little match.
AJ Styles versus Samoa Joe for the WWE title in a no count out, no disqualification match. We talked a little bit about this earlier on. I think we both expect Samoa Joe to walk out of Australia as champion. no count out, no DQ stipulation. It didn't exactly fit based on the finish of the match at Hell in a Cell, although they tried to make it sound like this stipulation is a direct result of that that finish, which doesn't really make any sense. But is this the way to let Samoa Joe win, but do so in a manner that he wouldn't win in a normal match, and that would be maybe AJ Styles' talking point going forward? Because, you know, even though we have either Bryan or Miz set up for a WWE title match, we also know that based on history, if Styles loses here, he will get a rematch somewhere in the future. And maybe that's, you know, maybe that's in Saudi Arabia. Maybe it's the winner of Bryan Miz versus Joe versus Styles in a triple threat match for the WWE title. So is this no DQ, no countout step away for Joe to let out his pent-up aggression and get him more over as a heel in winning the title?
Yeah, I think it is. I think it is. I think it's a way to chill that part of Joe's character. I think it's a way to, you know, yeah, this stipulation doesn't really make sense based on their match at Hell in a Cell and what came out of that, but I think it does line up with where they're at in the story right now, with both guys just in a fit of rage that want to just beat each other up. So in that regard, I think the stipulation works. It certainly doesn't work with what was coming out of Hell in a Cell, but they've kind of just altered course a little bit to get here. And yeah, I think the stipulation also just allows them leeway in a lot of different directions as far as the finish of the match goes. So whether it's Joe or AJ that's going to go over, I think having the stipulation in place protects either loser for a next match, for another match that can either headline a pay-per-view or take place in Saudi Arabia, or even if it's on just SmackDown. I think that's the point of it, and I think WWE's done a good job in booking the story so that it's simmering to that point by the time the match goes around. So much like Miz and Daniel Bryan, I've liked the build to this. I think they've done a good job, and I think it'll be one of the more interesting outcomes when it's all said and done this weekend.
The Cruiserweight title is on the line when Cedric Alexander defends against Australia's own Buddy Murphy. Zach, I'll defer to you, the 205 Live expert on this one. How have they handled the build for this match thus far? And is it more than just trying to appease the home nation by putting Buddy Murphy in this match? Is there a chance that he wins here?
There's definitely a chance that he wins. There's definitely a chance that he wins. If you go back to, you know, the Cruiserweight tournament that wrapped up at WrestleMania this year, you know, Buddy Murphy was a guy that had, I'd say, the top three matches in that tournament were all his. He consistently has good matches on the show. He's a good heel. He gets a heel reaction. So him being the guy to dethrone Cedric Alexander and win the championship would be a good pick. And not only would it be a good pick because he's a worthy champion at this point, but the other hot act on the show right now is Mustafa Ali. And he's a tried and true babyface. And him against Buddy Murphy and Ali chasing that championship and chasing him with that championship is a really smart story for WWE to tell on 205 Live. I'd venture as to say that Mustafa Ali is actually more popular and more over than Cedric Alexander, even without the title. He just kind of has that organic feel to him. So if they're going to capitalize on that, then I think Murphy's the smart choice to hold that belt until they pull the trigger on Mustafa Ali. So it's certainly an option. And I think at some point, whether it happens at this show or down the road, Murphy will be the guy to take that belt off Cedric Alexander next. Whether it happens here or not, it's up for grabs, but I'm going to say yes, just because it's in Australia. Murphy's from their hometown crowd. And so I think they can get the pop they're looking for there, and then come back here and feature him on TV as a heel that can run rampant on the show for a while. So I think it's time. I think Alexander's had a great run. He's had some really good matches, and I think he was the right guy for that belt in a time where that belt really, really needed somebody important to hold it. And I think he kind of, he righted the ship in a lot of ways, but I think it's time to move on, and Murphy's the guy to take it. So I'm gonna go ahead and say yes.
All right, we'll hold you to that. New Day takes on Cesaro and Sheamus. SmackDown tag team titles are on the line. This one feels fresh again because this is not the first time that these two teams have faced off, but we're almost guaranteed a really good match from these two teams, and I have no reason to believe any differently tonight and next week. And I think what works so well, Zach, with these guys are not only do they have very good chemistry in the ring, but their personalities are so different. You know, Cesaro and Sheamus, I don't want to call them buttoned up, but as heels, they don't really go for New Day's shenanigans, and New Day is all about the shenanigans.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is another feud where there's not a lot to the story necessarily, but this is one where their personalities could carry this feud for multiple months if they wanted to. And given SmackDown's tag team title depth, tag team division depth, they may have to.
True. And this is, yeah, this is one of those feuds and one of those matches that I think it doesn't need a story like other matches do. I mean, you can put these guys out there on any card at any time on any night, and 9 times out of 10, they're going to give you a really, really good match. And I think that's what's going to happen. That's what's going to happen here. I think they're going to put together a good match. This is another match that I think could easily open the show and start things off right. But yeah, their personalities work really well. I mean, you look at Cesaro and Sheamus, and there's just the way that they're able to use their facial expressions to just scowl at the New Day and what they do is really, it's entertaining. It's heelish in nature. It gets the response that the audience is supposed to give. And it just works. It works well. They have a good chemistry together. So yeah, you can put those guys out there at any time, whenever you need them. And they're going to deliver. And I think, basically that's what I'm thinking is going to happen this weekend. Cesaro and Sheamus are going to win the belts, but I think it's going to be a really good match, and it's going to be a fun one to watch.
Asuka and Naomi take on the Iconics, another Australian duo being brought aboard for this show. Has the Asuka-Naomi dynamic been as cringeworthy to you as it's been for me on television? This is a pair that seems like they have nothing in common, and the writing of their characters over the last few weeks has pretty much borne that out.
Oh my gosh! Yes, I could not agree more. It's if there's anything worse than cringeworthy, that's what it is. I can't even find the word to use. But yeah, I mean, it's one of those segments that make me like when I'm watching, or I'll watch with casual fans, or my wife will walk in and she'll watch and she'll just go like, what the heck is that? Like, what are they talking about? What's going on there? And I'm like, it just gives the embarrassing, like, oh, just don't worry about it.
It's just wrestling.
There's nothing really else to say. Yeah. Right. It's just wrestling. nothing to see here, folks,
yeah.
You know? And, you know, it's unfortunate because I think especially Asuka has just so much untapped, value right now that she's not being allowed to show. And I think, you know, there's some issues there. I think there's some issues there with her promo. I think that kind of, in my opinion, that's what soured folks on her, is that her inability to carry a promo the right way. But, you know, I still think that there's so much more there. Just don't ever talk as much. I mean, it's not that hard to figure out. And just to see her wasting away in this way, it's unfortunate. And same with Naomi on a lot of levels. I don't think this is up her alley in terms of a character and a storyline and an angle that's going to get her more over. I think she comes off looking just silly and goofy, and I think she could even be more than that. So I think it paints both women in a not the best light, and mm-hmm. it's unfortunate to watch. It really is. Cringeworthy. That's a good word.
Yeah. And finally, Becky Lynch against Charlotte for the SmackDown Women's Championship. And this is another match that will have eyes toward Evolution. I would expect a Lynch-Charlotte rematch at Evolution. So do they go with Becky winning at Super Showdown and Charlotte winning at Evolution? You know, what direction is this feud headed with Becky Lynch, the heel who's getting cheered, and Charlotte, the babyface who's getting booed?
I think this weekend Becky's gonna keep that title. I think it will really get to see, based on this match, where exactly WWE is going with this quote unquote heel turn, or whatever you want to call it. We can maybe analyze that in a second here, but I think we'll see what direction they're going to go, because I think if Becky gets the clean victory, that will tell us something. I think if Becky cheats to win, cheats to keep her title in her first championship defense against Charlotte, and that's what sets up the match at Evolution, then I think we're all further down the rabbit hole with this Becky Lynch heel character. So I think we'll learn a lot. Ultimately, I think WWE staying the course, or staying as on the course as much as they can with this turn. And I'm expecting Lynch to pull it out. I'm thinking it's going to be the finish of the night that has cheating involved. I think that's what they're going to use to try to keep some heel heat on her. And so I'm looking for Becky Lynch to retain, and then for them to go into that match at Evolution with a heated up feud between both women.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
I mentioned that New Japan Fighting Spirit Unleashed was taking place as we're recording this tonight from the Walker Pyramid in Long Beach, California. The lineup for that show, the Golden Lovers, take on Okada and Ishii. Juice Robinson versus Cody for the U.S. title. The Young Bucks versus the Gorillas of Destiny for the IWGP tag titles. Will Ospreay and Marty Scurll for the IWGP Junior Championship Tournament semifinal match. Tanahashi and Kushida versus Jay White and Gato. LIJ take on Suzuki-Gun in an 8-man tag match. Jeff Cobb, Chris Sabin, and Flip Gordon take on Goto, Beretta, and Chucky T in 6-man tag action. Daniels and Kazarian take on Hangman Page and Chase Owens. And Liger, Taguchi, and ACH face Roppongi 3K. That is going on as we record this, so we may have time next week to talk about the results of that major New Japan show taking place here in the United States. There was a time when that was a big news, Zach, and now it's like we're trying to fit that in here with all the other big events that are happening. So before we move on to our next talking point, we will hit the phones and go to Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland. Ryan, welcome back to Wrestling Night in America.
Well, first question I have for you is a sort of an MMA question, wrestling question on Ronda Rousey. You think that possibly Eve Torres could be a challenger for Ronda, since she's related to the Gracie family? That might be a believable opponent for her, since they've been bringing back a lot of these legends lately.
Yeah, and Eve would still feel special because she wasn't involved in the Women's Royal Rumble in January. So I think that would be a good choice. I think it might be a little late to get her involved at Evolution, because the direction is so clearly Rousey versus Nikki Bella, based on TV, based on how they've interacted, and they've been, buddy-buddy over the last few weeks. So they would have to take a hard left turn, Zach, from that direction. But if you're talking down the line sometime, even next year for Evolution, I think that would be a really cool match, just based on the story Ryan talked about. And like I said, the specialness of seeing Eve back in action.
I agree. Yeah, I don't see it going for this year at Evolution, just because they're just so close to the event at this point, with really no mention of Eve. But yeah, she's kind of the ace in WWE's ace in their hand a little bit, because she hasn't been around for any of this, like the Rebirth, the Divas Revolution, Women's Revolution. She's just kind of not been around. And so they can always play that card, and I think it'll attract some attention. I think there is a natural story there with her having that tie to MMA, and Ronda having that tie to MMA. But also, just I think they would work well together, especially Eve coming in as a heel that's kind of maybe there to, you know, hey, I'm the MMA woman on this show or something to that effect. So, yeah, I think it's an option. I don't think they're going to play it here, but maybe down the road next year.
Yeah, second question is on Shawn Michaels. Have you heard anything about him training anywhere? Like, does he still have his wrestling school in Texas that he can work out, or has he been working out at all at the Performance Center?
Well, he's
in good shape, too.
Yeah, he's a coach at the Performance Center now, so I would assume that his wrestling school has long been closed up. But I would assume that he's getting some workout in there. You know, even in a tag match, you know, that's been the reason Sean hasn't been wanting to come back, or at least one of the reasons, and why he's more comfortable coming back in a tag match scenario, because he doesn't want to sully his reputation and the memories that fans have of him as the showstopper, the icon, Mr. WrestleMania, whatever you want to call him. So I'm sure that he's been training at the Performance Center, and he will come in November and Saudi Arabia in tremendous shape, Zach.
Totally. I agree. I don't think he would do this and not take it seriously. Even in the tag match, I think Shawn Michaels has a ton of pride. I think he's got a ton of, just a ton of respect for his career and for the business and for his opponents that are going to be in that ring, the likes of Triple H, the likes of The Undertaker. So I think regardless of the fact, tag team match or not, Saudi Arabia or not, I think he's going to be looking just about as good as he can look. I think he's going to be as best shape as he could possibly be. And, you know, the chips will fall where they may, but he's going to be ready to go. There's no doubt in my mind about that.
In my final questions about the meeting that Impact had with OV a few weeks ago, is it possible that they could be meeting with them to get maybe girls from Impact for extra bodies for the Royal Rumble, and also for the they would do the Cruiserweight Classic, some X Division guys, make that event feel a little bit more special?
You know, crossover between the two. I know they're on friendly terms, friendly enough to have the, you know, Scott D'Amore meet with WWE officials at WWE headquarters and Ed Nordholm. But I don't know that crossover like that is something. I think it's going to be more behind-the-scenes stuff like the video footage, things of that nature. WWE has shown with the Mae Young Classic that they have enough females to build up the Women's Royal Rumble without needing to bring in anyone from another company. The Cruiserweight Classic, I don't see them doing another one anytime soon, so I doubt that was a discussion point. But, I mean, Zach, what do you think about the idea of maybe some crossover between Impact and WWE? It was always something fans dreamed about in the Monday Night War era. With this meeting, are we a step closer to seeing that on some level?
You know, I don't think so. I don't think that's what the meeting was for. That's not the vibe I've got based on what I've read and what's been reported about it. I think it was more just a standard business meeting to see where everybody's at, and that's kind of it. I'm not sensing that anything humongous is going to come out of because of this meeting right now. And Greg, like you said, they have so much access to so much talent right now. A lot of it is their own. You know, a lot of it is for the Mae Young Classic perspective. A lot of those women are in the WWE developmental system. Some aren't, but a lot of them are. And this is their WWE's chance to showcase them, to let them get out there and wrestle on a bigger stage. And I think WWE wants that for their developmental talent. Like, they want those types of opportunities so they can really see who's taking the next steps, who isn't, who's getting better, who isn't. And if you start throwing in outside people that aren't even in that system, it kind of goes against what that system is for. So yeah, I think it was more just a standard business meeting. I'm not sure anything's going to come out of it. You never say never in the wrestling business. So I certainly won't put money on any of that happening. But to me, it was just a standard business meeting, and I'm not sure it'll be much more than that at this point.
I agree. Ryan, as always, thanks for the call.
Okay, thanks for taking it.
Before we go to our next phone call, I want to hit on Raw and SmackDown this week with you, Zach. Before we talk about the results from this past week on Raw, the matches have been made, or at least a few, have been made for tomorrow night's Raw, Ronda Rousey versus Ruby Riott in singles action, and Bobby Lashley versus Kevin Owens, and we will have the return of Shawn Michaels, who will be back to make the final hard sell for Triple H versus Undertaker at Super Showdown. This past week on Raw, Finn Balor defeated Jinder Mahal. The Riott Squad defeated the Bellas and Natalya. Connor over Chad Gable. Dolph Ziggler and Drew McIntyre down to the Revival. Bobby Lashley defeated Elias via disqualification. Nia Jax defeated Alicia Fox. And The Shield beat Baron Corbin and AOP in the main event. What did you think about teasing a Dean Ambrose turn already? That would seem to be the end result whenever we get there with The Shield would be a Dean Ambrose turn. We've already seen the Seth Rollins turn. We know Roman Reigns is not going to turn heel. Was this a hint that maybe this Shield grouping isn't going to last as long as some think it is? Or is this just something to play up in leading into the six-man tag match in Australia?
Yeah, my issue, the second one, again, door number two, I think that's what it was. It was just a story to put out there for Monday Night Raw, something to weave through the show, and something to build interest in that six-man tag for Australia. And here's why. Like, that was my issue with the story. I truly applaud WWE's effort in taking that story and weaving it throughout the show. I thought they did it really effectively, and I thought they told the story well. I thought the promos behind it were good and entertaining to watch, and I thought Dean did a good job of kind of playing that middle ground and not letting it be known through his emotions which way he was going to go. But ultimately, I just didn't buy that the turn was going to come right now. I mean, if you look at all that's going on, you have the six-man tag with The Shield coming up this weekend. So it'd be hard-pressed for them to change that match at this point, and I couldn't get that thought out of my head when I was watching that story unfold. More so than that, Roman Reigns has a really big WWE Championship match at Crown Jewel against Braun Strowman and against Brock Lesnar in a triple threat match. And if you do the Dean Ambrose heel turn, presumably he'd turn and then feud with Roman Reigns. So knowing that match couldn't happen in the immediate future of or the immediate aftermath of that turn, it just, the stars didn't align for me to look at him potentially turning on Raw and say, yeah, there's a good chance that this would happen. I actually thought the other way, that just there's too much going on. There's just no way it can actually take place. And so it was just a little bit hard to buy. So that's the part that I graded a little bit down for, just the believability of it. But I thought the execution was good, and I liked the fact that they took a story and wove it through the entire show. I liked that, but I just didn't really believe at any point that Dean was that close to actually turning heel right now.
One of the major talking points on social media coming out of Raw was actually the incident that took place during the women's tag match, pitting the Riott Squad against the Bellas and Natalya. Brie Bella with an errant kick, apparently causing a concussion to Liv Morgan, and then giving a stiff shot to Ruby Riott on the apron. So a lot of discussion, a lot of argument about where the blame falls here. If Brie now has a history of being a dangerous wrestler and she was reckless in the ring with her kicks, or was this just an accident that happens a lot in wrestling? And this time, unfortunately, it caused a concussion to Liv Morgan. Is there a side you fall on that discussion, Zach?
Yes, there is. I firmly do not believe that it was anything that Brie Bella did on purpose to injure.
Well,
Liv
no,
Morgan.
And I don't think anyone's arguing that, but they're saying, is she dangerous / sloppy, or is this just wrestling and this happens?
Got it. Well, no, yeah, I think she's a little dangerous and sloppy right now. I think, yes, it happens in wrestling, but and it can happen to the best of them, like we've seen from Seth Rollins. And in both instances, Seth or Brie here or anybody, you got to try to make that sloppiness less sloppy. Like, that's the bottom line. I mean, sloppiness leads to injuries. So I think that's what happened in that match with Brie. I think she just was a little sloppy, took her eye off the ball a little bit, and then a wrestling injury took place. So do I think she should be banned from all wrestling rings? Absolutely not. It happened, but she does need to be more careful in there, just like anybody would after hurting somebody like that. And I think if she determines that, hey, I can't throw those kicks the right way anymore, then she needs to stop doing them, just like that, the suicide dive through the ropes. If she says, hey, I really can't do that anymore, I'm a little rusty, and you know, I'm not as young as I was, or whatever the case may be, whatever that is, you got to just be honest with yourself and say, hey, I can do this, I can't do that, and then alter the match from there. So yeah, I mean, was it an accident? Yes. Does she need to clean it up? Absolutely. And I think that's the case for anybody that hurts somebody in the ring, not just Brie.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
This episode of Raw reached a record low rating, or near record low rating, depending on the numbers you look at, depending on how you take holiday editions of Monday Night Raw, whether you count them in that or not. You know, Raw was still numbers 4, 6, and 7 in the cable ratings for the evening, but this has still got to be some kind of concern. And I know the cord cutting, and I know, you know, non-traditional viewers and DVR and all these excuses. Are ratings even worth talking about right now, Zach? I'll give you another multiple choice question here. Do they not matter anymore because of the different ways people are consuming WWE's product, and because of the big Fox deal? You know, is this not a concern anymore, or does this not bode well for turning the page to 2019? Because yes, they have a big deal with Fox, but there's nothing to my knowledge that says that entire deal will be carried out until the end. You know, WWE being on Fox television each and every week, are they subject to the same cancellation possibilities as any other show that would be in that time slot? So I guess, how do we view ratings now? Does this low rating matter, full stop?
It definitely matters. I mean, I think it absolutely matters. Yeah, there's cord cutting, there's ways to consume the WWE product digitally and on social media. Like, that's all well and good, but you have to look at those television deals. And those television deals weren't secured because WWE has a million followers or a million views or whatever it is on YouTube. Those deals were secured because they get ratings that mean they can get a deal like that. I mean, it's not hard to follow. You got a show that has good content 52 weeks a year that gets people watching, and that's why they have the deal that they have. So for the rating to drop drastically like it did, and not on a holiday weekend, I think, yeah, that should definitely open eyes at the WWE, and I think it will definitely open eyes at the likes of Fox if bringing reports like that keep coming in. I mean, that's the thing. You know, when you play in a big pond and a big pool, like with the likes of Fox, you got a lot of eyes looking at you, and you have to be buttoned up and do what you said you were going to do and deliver what you said you're going to deliver. And Fox is certainly expecting a certain type of rating, and I'm pretty sure their expectation is not the worst rating in Raw history, or one of the worst. So
right.
I definitely think this is something that they have to watch, and they need to alter course from a creative perspective and show content perspective if need be to get there, because they're with the big boys now, and they need to deliver on what they promised.
And I guess as an asterisk to this conversation, it is SmackDown that's going to Fox and not Raw. So whether or not Raw's viewership is important to Fox, we don't know. You know, are they just tracking SmackDown? Are they tracking WWE ratings as a whole? I'm not sure, but I guess it's worth throwing that in the conversation, that we're talking about the Raw ratings, we're talking about the Fox deal, and they are separate going forward, starting in 2019.
Yeah, they are. And it's, I think it's a really important note to make, for sure. And at the same time, though, you know, Raw is today the flagship show. Maybe that'll change in the fall of 2019 once SmackDown moves to Fox. But today, it's the flagship. And I think it's, in a lot of ways, interest in that show drives interest in all the other different pieces of content that WWE has. So yes, SmackDown is the one that's moving, but I think you learn a lot from analyzing what's happening on Monday Night Raw.
SmackDown this past week saw Truth TV lead things off when R-Truth took over The Miz's set, and he and Carmella were joined by Daniel Bryan. Eventually, The Miz came out and defeated R-Truth in singles action. We also had Sheamus take on Big E and defeat Big E in a one-on-one matchup. Aiden English made some vague accusations to Lana that seemed to surprise Rusev after Aiden's heel turn the previous week. Asuka and Naomi defeated Sonya Deville and Mandy Rose. Ty Dillinger over Shinsuke Nakamura via disqualification when Randy Orton interfered. Becky Lynch defeated Lana. And Joe invaded AJ Styles' home. I guess it had to come to that at some point. And really, this made Joe look very smart, because the week AJ thought Joe was going to be in his home, Joe wasn't there. And then a couple weeks went by and people kind of forgot about it. And then now Joe was there and AJ didn't, you know, AJ thought that threat had passed, apparently. So I like what Joe did there with AJ Styles and playing those mind games and things like that. Is that too personal for you? Is that not entertaining to you, do you think? Or does that hit the right note and keep consistency with Samoa Joe's character?
Definitely keep consistency with Joe's character. I think, you know, not a lot of people could pull that off, like, in the right way, in a way that works, in a way that makes sense with the story. I think a lot of times something like that just kind of feels thrown in out of the blue, but this lined up, and it lined up well, like I said, from a storyline perspective, but also just because of the crazy character that Joe is playing right now. It's just the crazed, serious psycho lunatic, and I think it made sense, and I think it was executed good. Like I said, you really can go overboard with that kind of thing, but I felt that Joe walked the line well, and I thought it was a nice next chapter in this AJ Styles Samoa Joe story.
R-Truth has been somewhat of a find over the last few weeks. He's
Man.
Entertained me, and I assume by that reaction that he's entertained you, which kind of takes a little of the edge off my question. I guess I'll ask it this way. How entertaining has R-Truth been? Do you think he's been used in, I mean, he made a vetted SmackDown a couple weeks ago. Is that the right spot for him? Can he rub elbows with the Miz's of the world, the top-tier guys on SmackDown? Or is he a comedy guy who should be kept in the lower card?
Man, it's tough to answer right now because he's so entertaining. But ultimately, he's a guy that's going to be used to get other guys over, I think. You know, I think he's just going to be that type of workhorse on the show from now until the end of his career. Now, that said, that doesn't mean he can't be entertaining in that vein, and I think that's exactly what he is right now. Going into that segment on SmackDown this past week, even though in weeks leading up I thought he's been really entertaining, like seeing him out there having to to carry that, because it was a long segment, and seeing him out there having to help carry that segment, I was a little worried that, you know, at some point when or if that gimmick or that level of being entertaining is going to wane. And it didn't. I mean, he kept up with the likes of The Miz up there, and he did his thing, and he's doing it well. But no, I don't see him as a guy that's going to be in a serious main event program. I don't think he's going to be a guy that's going to be challenging for the WWE Championship, and he might not even be on the level of the United States Championship right now. But like I said, that just doesn't mean there's no room for him. I mean, he is there to enhance talent. He knows the business. He knows how to work the crowd. He knows how to get really anything over. I mean, you look at all the crazy things that he's gotten over in that ring throughout the years, and
yeah,
there's not really anything you could throw at him that he can't make work. And that's a valuable guy to have, especially with young guys on the roster and guys like The Miz who can play off that type of act so well. So yeah, he's going to be what he is, and that's really it. But that's okay. And SmackDown needs somebody like that. And he plays his role well, and I think that's part of the reason why WWE has kept him around for so long.
515-605-9345 is the number to call if you'd like to talk in the last half hour of the show here with Zach and I. We go to the 111 area code. I believe this is Craig from Toledo. Craig, do we have you?
You have me, Greg.
Oh, wonderful. Good to talk to you again, Craig. What's on your mind tonight?
I wanted to say a nice talking to you, Zach, for the first time ever.
Me
and
too.
your Come Into the Corner podcast thing you got going on, it's tremendous. Love it.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
No, if you guys haven't checked out the breakdown of it, on the canvas. I think it was the first one you did was the Ali and Buddy Murphy match, right?
That was an early one. Yep.
Yeah, that was like, it was so awesome. Just to recap that match, I was at work and going through that in my mind, rewatching it as you broke it down. It was so great.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you.
As far as Buddy Murphy's concerned, I don't think he really wrestles heel. And I think he'll come back a face with the title. Like he doesn't cheat really. He just brings it. Like he'll take his shots, you know, here and there, but not anymore. Like, no one interferes on his behalf and stuff like that. Do you think there's a possibility that Buddy Murphy is going to be the Drake Maverick? Go on tangents, but Drake Maverick went on Edge and Christian's podcast and like totally hyped up Buddy Murphy. And he said basically what we've all been saying is like every match that's been talked about this year has been a Buddy Murphy match, ironically, because no one even knew who Buddy Murphy was before this year. And I think that they're going to push him to the moon with this cruiserweight thing. Do you think that he is going to be a face when he comes back?
Zach, what do you think?
Well, yeah, it's an interesting take. It's an interesting take. And you're right that his wrestling style is certainly that of a babyface in a lot of ways, with the high impact moves, the flashiness of some of his moonsaults, and some of his just day to day and in ring mechanics, that it a lot of it's babyface in nature. That said, a lot of the cruiserweights in general, like that style of wrestling, is very babyface in nature. So even though he's working that style, I think that's just the cruiserweight style. And if you look at his character and look at who he associates with on the show in terms of associating with Tony Nese, a guy who is a true heel, listen to the promos that he cuts, the way he talks to Cedric Alexander and Drake Maverick. And I still think even with the in-ring style, he still lines up on the heel side. Now, he's going to get a big reaction in Australia at the show, and I do think he's going to come back. That was my pick for that match. I do think he's going to come back as cruiserweight champion and get kind of that babyface reaction in Australia. But I still think once he comes back, though, he's firmly in that heel column. That nothing from a character standpoint has told me he's going to change to this point. So. It is a good point about the ring work. It's hard to boo that guy when he's working that kind of style and having those kind of matches. But from a character perspective, he's a pretty firm heel in my eyes.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit, and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
Greg?
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry. One of the things you guys were talking about was the mention of TNA. Meeting and how that would affect the WWE and the way they interact. Mm-hmm. I think it's kind of a slow dribble to getting mentioning other corporations, wrestling institutions, like back in 94 when Smoky Mountain was doing their thing, they kind of mentioned Smoky Mountain. They brought in Jim Cornette. They had some of their guys. They brought in ECW guys. I think it was 95 or 90, maybe it's 96, 97. But they brought in some of those guys. But they never, like, fully embraced the idea of there's wrestling outside of here. Now, it's in an era of everything is known. If you're watching wrestling, you know that there is other wrestling. Like, no one that is watching WWE thinks that WWE is the only thing.
I'm not so sure about that, Craig. I'm not so sure about that.
Really?
I think there are fans who are casual enough fans, WWE fans, probably younger fans, who probably think WWE is wrestling. And it's not like Impact has a major market share. It's not like they're on a major television network that does major advertising. So if you watch just WWE, you wouldn't necessarily run into – and you don't check the internet. Like, you're not on Twitter every week. You don't check pwtorch.com. If you are just a fan who watches TV, who watches the WWE Network, who watches when WWE comes to town and buys a ticket to the house shows, I think you're not going to run into any Impact advertising or any Ring of Honor advertising if you are just that type of casual fan.
But, well, I'll put it like this. And I was out of wrestling from 96 to 2014. I got back into WWE and all that in 2014. I just randomly bought a Royal Rumble when I was drunk one Sunday night. And
that's how wrestling fandom always starts.
No, but I watched it. I watched it back in 96, and I'm like, oh, the Royal Rumble. All right, well, let's start watching a little, like, because it was like an off week of playoff football. And I was just like sitting there and told my friend to come on over, and we started watching the Royal Rumble, and the Daniel Bryan and Bray Wyatt match really like got me hooked. I was like, dude, they're doing this stuff right now. This is like the stuff I like. They're doing that in WWE right now. Of course, if you go back and watch that match, it is brutal. I've watched it. I've gone back and watched it. It is not good knowing what happened to Daniel Bryan's head. Yeah. You know, it's kind of gross, but the point is, I went and like, I just started watching casually from there, but one of my friends told me about this show that came on at like 1 o'clock in the morning after Saturday Night Live. And he's like, oh man, you watch this crap, blah, blah, blah. And it was ROH. Mm. And so I like, it was on basic cable because it's Sinclair. And I like watched a little of that. So what I'm trying to get at is, would it be considered benevolent? Like, you know, WWE is like all about this benevolence right now. Would it be considered benevolent for WWE to just acknowledge things like, cause they've acknowledged IWGP titles and stuff like that. Would it be benevolent for them? And would it get some, I don't know the right word I'm looking for, but would it get some fan sympathy? It's not sympathy, but like, it would get people like us to think, hey, they're actually acknowledging these people that are beneath them, and that makes them cool. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think that's always kind of what we wanted. I think WWE's ignoring any kind of wrestling outside of WWE and ignoring wrestling history outside of WWE has always been a thorn in some fans' sides. So if they acknowledge Impact in some way in passing, like AJ Styles versus Samoa Joe, maybe acknowledging the matches that they had in Impact, or maybe in the build-up to one of their matches coming up, maybe showing some footage of them early in their careers in Impact Wrestling fighting each other. I think that would be cool. It would add another dimension, and it wouldn't really hurt WWE in any way by acknowledging that Impact Wrestling is a thing that exists outside of WWE. I don't think all of a sudden people are just going to start flocking to Impact. But, you know, the reasons have to make good sense for WWE. It has to make good business sense for them. And I don't think this meeting between Nordholm and Damore with WWE brass was about getting Impact mentioned on WWE TV. I think there had to be something more substantial than that. But I would be someone who would be in favor of WWE acknowledging not just Impact, but any kind of wrestling outside of WWE. Of course, then that brings up the argument that WWE doesn't see itself as wrestling, and specifically Vince McMahon. They see themselves as sports entertainment, and they see New Japan as wrestling, and they see Impact as wrestling, and they see themselves as sports entertainment, so they're quote-unquote different. But Zach, I mean, I don't really see any scenario where it would hurt WWE to acknowledge Impact. Like I said, I don't think WWE is going to send people searching their television guides to find when Impact Wrestling is on if they mention it in passing on TV.
No, absolutely not. And I think you're on the money. Like, if and when it makes a business sense to do so, I think WWE shouldn't worry about the pettiness of mentioning another wrestling promotion and go ahead and do it. I look back to the AJ Styles Shinsuke Nakamura WrestleMania match in particular, and I thought that was a really big missed opportunity to not address the fact that they've have this history, because that very history is what made a lot of folks want to see that match again. Same thing with Samoa Joe and AJ Styles. You know, they're at their point right now where they're heating up a story. They're getting very personal. And if it makes business sense, I think if Vince and WWE decide that, hey, by playing up that history, it's going to get people more invested in the story so that we sell more tickets or get more network subscriptions, you know, whatever the case may be, then yeah, they should kind of leave the ego at the door. At the same time, though, yeah, I mean, WWE is a business, and they're not in the business of making sure that every other wrestling promotion is promoted on their product. So there's a fine line, but I think the pettiness is the word that comes to mind. I mean, they are a huge, you know, global company. I don't think they have to worry about talking about an ROH feud between. A TNA feud between AJ Styles and Samoa Joe. I think they're beyond that, and to not use it to their advantage is a mistake on their part.
Craig, a third and final comment or question for us tonight.
My third one is the thing about the ratings, and the week after the $1 billion deal that WWE struck with Fox for SmackDown Live. You, Greg Parks, mm-hmm. Greg M. Parks, came on the PW Torch and said that ratings are going to matter more than they did before. And I have been a firm stance of saying that ratings do not matter mm-hmm. nearly as much as they had before. Ratings determine how a segment of the population consume television. And depending on what segment you're polling, they matter to that degree. And the fact that they got a $1 billion deal for what they did kind of validates that to me. I know people disagree, and there's only you and me, and we just disagree. There ain't no good guys, there ain't no bad guys. But the ratings have been dipping since I've been a subscriber to the PW Torch. Like, Wade comes out every Wednesday or Thursday, and he does a Keller Hotline, and he says the ratings, they've slipped again. I mean, they haven't not flipped. They've been slipping since 2014. And I think it has a lot to do with the constituency with which the polling is being done. And I think that eventually Nielsen and pretty much all polling is going to just go out the window. It's like, we don't really know what we're talking about. So what my question to you is, when they bring SmackDown Live to Fox, are they going to go whole hog and try to book the biggest cities and the brightest lights? Or are they going to come to places like Toledo? Because SmackDown has been a Toledo, or, you know, a Toledo destination. Mm-hmm. And Raw hasn't come here for, like, since, I think, 2010. I'm not sure.
You
can cut me off. My dog's going to keep barking.
Okay. Thanks, Craig, for the call. I'm not going to profess to sit here and know the ins and outs of ratings as well as some others. I know they are a valuable tool for advertisers, and I know they're not going away anytime soon, even as people continue to cut cord and things of that nature. I also don't know, you know, we talked about this earlier, Zach. I don't know the details of the WWE on Fox deal, but if WWE, worst case scenario, pulls in awful ratings on Friday night, like, you know, just bottom of the barrel, is Fox bound to keep them on in some way, or can they cancel them? Like, they can cancel any other show that would be in that time slot that would be doing this similar rating. So I don't know what the contract looks like. I don't know if that's possible. I would assume there's some sort of out clause for Fox so that they don't have to pay $1 billion if WWE isn't pulling their weight. And then you would have to think about all the ancillary WWE programming. If they do any on FS1 or FS2, that would be an issue too. If the deal was canceled, they'd have to find extra programming to fill that spot. But to Craig's question, I would expect SmackDown to be. I would not expect any more of this. We're in such a small city that we're not going to be able to name the city. I would think that they would be putting SmackDown in some pretty big cities to start off, at least. However, there are only so many big cities, and there are so many big cities that you can run one after the other, especially when you're talking about 52 weeks of programming a year. They can't go to Boston, Miami, New York City, and Los Angeles, and rotate those same four cities every week. It's just not possible. They're going to have to go to some of the smaller cities eventually. But if possible, I would think that the lineup would be pretty heavy of big cities, at least at the start of SmackDown Live on Fox.
No question. I mean, this show is going to get the same sort of treatment that Monday Night Raw gets. I think that's a good benchmark where you can look at it and say, all right, well, what cities is Raw visiting? And I think it's going to be along those lines. I mean, that's just the kind of show that it's going to have to be when it goes to Fox. And it's going to be one of the biggest stories of next year when this show gets on Fox. I mean, without question. And yeah, the ratings thing is interesting, and people certainly have their opinions on it. And I'm definitely of the mindset of, like, yes, the television landscape is changing, and yes, social viewing and digital media habits and over-the-top connected TV, like, that's all part of the content puzzle right now. But you can't ignore the fact at this moment today that there's millions of people that turn their TVs on to watch Monday Night Raw and to watch SmackDown, and
90 seconds.
Those ratings are slipping, and that has to be on WWE's mind. There's just no way around it in my eyes. But yes, to get back to the question, I think SmackDown, obviously, that's going to be a huge focus of next year. We're talking big cities, big lights, big stories too, and major stars. I think the red carpet's going to be rolled out for SmackDown in 2019.
And I think it's worth talking about this worst case scenario for WWE and wondering what that contract with Fox looks like, because so much of WWE's revenue and profit is tied up with these TV deals. They would like to, be making a lot more money off the network, but the reality is so much of the money they make is coming off these TV deals. And if all of a sudden in the snap of a finger, a Fox executive decides that they don't want WWE on their TV anymore, what are the repercussions for that? They would be pretty serious, even just stock market-wise. So it is worth, I think, it's not us sitting here being negative about WWE or anything like that, but I think it is worth considering the consequences of a worst-case scenario situation, because the repercussions would be far and wide for WWE.
Right, and that
10 seconds.
WWE is unique and for better and for worse in this regard, that they don't have another show that that Fox can try. There's not, they can't just put out feelers for showrunners and take different shows and pick one to run on Friday nights. Like, all right, WWE doesn't have that luxury. They are one thing. They are sports entertainment or pro wrestling. So they need to get it right. And I don't, like you said, I'm not sure what the verbiage is, but you can put some pretty good money down on the fact that there is certainly some in there. I mean, if the ratings tank 80%, you can rest assured that Fox isn't going to be giving WWE $2 billion. So it's just I think that's just
logic, but and maybe a good project to go and find the fine print on that and see what the out clause really is, if it's out there, because it's an interesting one. And I'm not sure that WWE is on that level in terms of tanking, but you know, they just are going to be watching that at the very least. I think they're going to be looking at it, and they have to address it.
Zach, are you caught up on the Mae Young Classic?
I am an episode behind. Oh, I don't know, a half of an episode behind.
Okay.
So, but I'm up to speed on the results of that. So I'm almost through episode 3.
Okay. So we will. I'll talk about the results here. This past week on the Mae Young Classic, Hiroyo Matsumoto defeated Rachel Evers, Tainara Conchi over Jesse Eleban, Nicole Matthews defeated Isla Dawn, and Io Shirai defeated Zaya Brookside. Since you are almost caught up, Zach, I'll ask you this question. Who's been the most impressive that you've seen through round one this year?
Oh, man, I think it's been a really good tournament so far. I think we've seen a lot of good talent. I'm a huge Toni Storm fan, so I've really enjoyed her work. I think she has an it factor that, to me, is heads above the rest of the women who've been in that tournament who I've seen thus far. She just has this different level to her where you can – I see her and I'm like, that's a big star. The way she carries herself, the way she can wrestle in the ring, just her overall presentation just seems big time to me. I think she gets it, and just it clicks. So I've been very impressed with her, dating back to last year's Mae Young Classic, but this year too. You can tell, you know, looking back to last year and looking at this year, that she's grown a little bit, and I think she understands the business even more, and she's just a really well-rounded performer that I think has some big things ahead of her in this business.
And how would you compare the field this year to last year? Last year was the first one. There was some star power there. Do you look at the field and say it was better overall last year, or from what you've seen this year and what you know about the women that you maybe haven't seen yet, would you say this year is stronger, or is it pretty equal?
I think for the most part it's pretty equal. I think I haven't either. Neither year was I just kind of blown away by the women in the brackets. Like, I thought, yeah, there's some good talent here and there, and I think it's sprinkled in nicely. And there's also some unknown talent that I don't know from the Performance Center. And I think for the most part that's the vibe that I get this year. The thing with this year, though, is watching the WWE developmental women, I think that has been one of the most interesting parts, and seeing them progress year to year is really interesting to watch. Her name is escaping me right now. My God, she won her first round match. She's just very tall. I think she has like the NXT UK championship or something like that. What's her name?
Rhea Ripley.
Oh my gosh, it's killing me. Rhea Ripley, that's who it is. Thank you, Greg. I have really liked watching her. I think she's come a long way from last year to this year. So, but the overall field, I think, is similar in terms of my reaction to it. But I think those, like, women like Rhea Ripley just bring more to the table this year, being a little bit more seasoned and developed in the WWE system. So that's been the fun part for me to watch, outside of the fact that there is some big stars like Toni Storm, et cetera.
Well, Zach, our time is up for this week. I appreciate you joining me for Wrestling Night in America, as always, and I encourage everybody to check out your work at pwtorch.com, both in the free and the VIP section. Let the listeners know where they can follow you on social media.
You can follow me, guys, at Z Heydorn. That's at Z-H-E-Y-D-O-R-N. And Greg, thanks so much for having me, as always. I always love talking wrestling with you, so hopefully we can do it again soon.
Absolutely, and you can find me on Twitter at Greg M. Parks. So for Zach Heydorn, I'm Greg Parks. Until next week, thank you for joining me here on another edition of Wrestling Night in America on pwtorchlivecast.com.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free additions to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan 4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer. And there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan 4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip. Live!